Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I'm reading the news, I'm James Walton. Let's begin. Fireworks have again been the subject of conversation at Canby City Council over the past few weeks as councilors sought to expand the Canby School District's noise ordinance exemption to include the aerial display that traditionally marks the end of the high school graduation ceremony. In 2018, the council held public hearings on the fireworks issues at the request of Paul Ilvesacker, a nearby resident who suffers from chronic pain and PTSD that he says the random explosions exacerbate, and from other neighbors as well. But things did not go the way they'd hoped. Rather than restrict the Canby School District's aerial displays, the council carved out an explicit exemption for the district in the existing noise ordinance, similar to the ones already on the books for other local government entities like the Canby Fire District for the 4th of July fireworks and the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. But oddly, the exemption covered only the fireworks used to celebrate touchdowns at Canby High School football games, leaving out the displays that have accompanied Canby High graduation ceremonies for decades. Technically, this meant the school officials would have needed to request a noise variance from the city each year to continue the graduation fireworks, which councilors almost certainly would have approved with little fuss. But earlier this year, Councilor Chris Bangs, who is also a teacher at Canby High School, proposed a far simpler solution: amend the ordinance to include an exemption for the graduation ceremony. Councilors gave a final approval to the amendment at their July 21st meeting, officially codifying the use of fireworks at both Canby football games and graduation in the existing noise ordinance. Ilvesacker has also returned to the story. The local contractor became very much the face of the anti-fireworks crowd in 2019 when he presented a petition signed by 50 residents and several businesses asking that the football tradition go away, which the city and school officials appeared to agree to, before backtracking 2 days later, calling it a misunderstanding. Ilvesacker has continued to push the issue this year, frequently decrying the carte blanche the district has been given to use fireworks as abusive and discriminatory to his neighborhood. Interestingly, though, he did not oppose the actual amendment being considered, adding a noise exemption for graduation, but the practice of treating the Canby football team differently than other students, or indeed other athletics or activities. I will support for graduation because that's an achievement that many students can be a part of, Ilvesacker said. It doesn't take athletic ability, and the celebration of that would be at a specific time, not random, so I'm in favor of it. Displays that are anticipated and happen over a set interval, for example 4th of July or graduation, can tend to be less impactful to those with PTSD than random, unexpected explosions. Ilvesacker said that they also can afford residents an opportunity to make arrangements for their pets, like his cat, of whom he shared a photo with the mayor and the city councilors at the last meeting. "This is my cat," he said, walking the picture around the front of the dais at City Hall. "This is an animal that is abused when the fireworks start. I'm not making it up. I'd bring my cat here, but that would be abusive. It needs to stop." Ilvesacker attempted to draw a parallel between the city's continuation of football fireworks in the name of tradition while spending millions to enact a quiet zone at three railroad intersections in downtown Canby. Tradition seems to be the theme, or excuse, and I believe it to be an excuse, for continuing the explosions, he said. Yet, you are all willing to change the tradition of train whistles at three crossings. Our nation recognized certain traditions to be harmful, abusive, as well as discriminatory, he continued, referring to amendments abolishing slavery and giving women and people of color the right to vote. As a nation, we amended our Constitution to eliminate these behaviors. The amendment to the city's noise ordinance passed unanimously, with Bangs abstaining due to his employment with the district. Government can be criticized for being too bloated and oversized, but one local entity, the Canby Area Parks and Recreation District, or CAPRD, is actively trying to get smaller. The district actually has a long history in our area, one that significantly predates what was once considered its geographical counterpart, the North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District. But you could be forgiven for knowing little about it or presuming it was one and the same with the city's Parks and Recreation Department. It is not. The CAPRD is an independent special district, much like North Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, run by a board of directors whose seats appear on the ballot every 4 years. The problem is that it has no tax base, no levy, no funding source, no property, and no real operations. It's like a baby. It has loads of potential, and nobody is necessarily trying to get rid of it or anything, but it doesn't really do much. CAPRD was founded in 1964 as the South Clackamas Parks and Recreation District, and its main business, at least in view of the public, over the last six decades has been changing its name, first to the Blue Heron Recreation District, and now to CAPRD. Directors have tried at least a half a dozen times to pass a permanent tax rate to support parks and development programming, always to no avail. The most recent attempt was in 2011, a proposed 42 cents per $1,000 assessed value that could have also replaced the levy for the Canby Swim Center that goes before voters for renewal every 5 years. It failed, with more than 60% opposed. In hindsight, the timing may have been ill-advised, with the nation well into the early stages of an historic recession, but CAPRD officials say the margins of defeat have been pretty consistent in each election, regardless of economic factors. The issue, officials believe, lies with CAPRD's boundaries, which more or less mirror those of the Canby School District. The district is much larger and more politically conservative than the city, and deep dives into polling data have suggested a strong rural-urban split in CAPRD's previous attempt to establish a tax base. In past elections, the voting indicated that the measure passed within the city limits of Canby, but it failed in the rest of the district, City Administrator Scott Archer explained at a recent city council meeting. That had sparked the suggestion to shrink the district's boundaries to match the city limits and urban growth boundary, an idea that is also not particularly a new one for CAPRD, but one that now appears to have some real traction. CAPRD board member Andrew Hale appeared before the council on July 21st to explain the move and request the city's support. The request and letters of support for the redistricting will go to the Board of County Commissioners, which can grant the downsizing outright or refer it to district voters. The timing looks really good for us, along with the fact that the city is also doing a master plan for parks, Hill said. Because CAPRD is a potential fund mechanism, we were one of the stakeholders in that process, so you know that we're here, what our goals are, and what we're trying to support. Some of those things seem to be aligning really well. While most councilors seem to be in favor of the letter of support, with some minor tweaks to the wording, one decidedly was not. It is no secret that I have never been a fan of CAPRD, Council President Tracy Hensley said. Its history has been riddled with problems. I do think we can take a beat, have a work session, and educate the new councilors on its history. I'm not a fan of another layer of government governing our park system, so I'm a hard no on this. I would actually like to see that layer of government go away. Hensley clarified that it was nothing personal. She appreciated Hale and the other members who serve on CAPRD's board, but the idea of two entities with identical boundaries, the city and CAPRD, both supporting parks and recreational activities, seemed redundant to her, and other councilors shared this concern. The fact that any tax support for CAPRD would still have to gain voter approval, regardless of the district size, seemed to assuage some of those concerns, and councilors ultimately voted 4-1 to support the move, with Hensley opposed and Councilor Jordan Tibbles absent. Counselors did ask for a future work session to discuss Cappert and what a working arrangement might look like. Hale said Cappert hopes for the county to rule on their request by the end of the year. Brittany Meskey's 4-year-old son, Michael, asked for something special for his birthday this year, a real-life police car. The wish wasn't within Meskey's power to grant, but it was for a Canby police officer who surprised Michael this week by making his birthday dream come true. Last month, Meskey had thrown her son an elaborate police and fire-themed birthday, complete with a flaming cake, first responder-themed snacks, potato salad, anyone? Donut pinata, and a mugshot photo booth. She posted photos on the local Facebook group Canby Now, along with Michael's wish for a real police car and fire truck. She certainly did not expect a Canby law enforcement official to see the post or reach out to her, but that's exactly what Canby officer Todd Trapp did. The officer saw the post and sent me a direct message asking if he could stop by so Michael could actually sit in a real police car, Meskey said. Oh, it made his birthday wish come true. Michael was a little shy at first, but that soon changed. As soon as the lights and the siren went on, he couldn't hold back the smiles, Meskey recounted. He had a toy cop car he showed the officer, and they took a picture together with his toy car next to the real car. He is obsessed with anything fire, police, lifelight, AMR, he loves all of it. For Meskey, who recently left a security job in part to negativity some associate with law enforcement and those in uniform, it was amazing and humbling to see a police officer she'd never met go out of his way to make a special birthday memory for her son. Oh, it was truly amazing, she said. Watching him interact with Michael, showing him all the buttons, the radio, and letting him reel in the spike strips, it was so cool. It's so important for our youth to have positive interactions with our law enforcement officers. For him to reach out in that way, Officer Trapp definitely has a good heart. For photos, you can find this story on our website at canbyfirst.com. There are many ways you could evidence Susan Peach's importance to DirectLink and the impact she made on its members and employees during her 22 years of service. But the easiest way to sum it all up is a story from one of the rare times in those two decades that Peach wasn't at her usual post. Peach was on a well-deserved vacation at the time, and DirectLink Billing Services Manager Sharon Pullum was covering the phones. But the caller knew instantly that there was something different. The voice on the other end said, "You're not Susan," Pullman recalled with a laugh. Where is Susan? Most folks in customer service don't gain a fan following, or expect to, but most folks aren't Susan Peach. Colleagues say Peach, who retired last month, gained hers through her infectious and constant smile, welcoming attitude, and sterling reputation for being kind, helpful, and genuine. "I've referred to her many times as the voice of DirectLink," said Pullman. "It is her friendliness and the way that she loves her members. They speak with her, and they love it." Susan was very member-focused, agreed Member Services Supervisor Michelle Madison. She greeted them by name and made them feel important. Peach joined the DirectLink team as a temp agency recruit in January of 1999, joining the permanent staff on June 24th of that year, back when the telecommunications provider was still known as the Canby Telephone Association, or simply CTA. She comes from a long line, pun as always is intended, of telecommunications employees and operators, she said, and reckoned it was in her blood. "I thought, okay, let's just go along with the flow," Peach recalled with a laugh. "And you know, I liked people and I liked answering phones." As Canby and DirectLink itself grew around her, Peach remained one of the agency's most visible representatives to members and the greater community. She said she always enjoyed the chance to interact with members in person and over the phone. "I enjoyed the interactions with all the members and my coworkers," she said. "I made friends with people over the phone and in person, people that I recognized every month. They felt like they were friends to me, and that always kept me going." Peach was also active in many organizations in the Canby and Mount Angel communities, like the Canby Adult Center, Canby Independence Day Celebration, Slice of Summer, and North Willamette Valley Habitat for Humanity builds, and was a key contributor to countless DirectLink initiatives and volunteer endeavors. "I enjoyed all of that," she said. "I always love getting out with the Canby people. It feels good to have everybody together and feel like you're part of something bigger." Peach took pride in her job and in making sure that people were taken care of, and she said she hopes she leaves a legacy of respect and hard work. "I got along with everybody. I enjoyed working with everybody," she said. I worked with a lot of people over the years, and I just hope that they remember me as someone friendly and willing to do the job and take on extra whatever. Peach plans to take it easy in retirement, with the most excitement likely coming from the occasional ATV ride. No epic memoirs are currently in the works. I've had people over the years saying, you should write a book. Well, between the kids and my work, she chuckled, but no. Just planning on doing some traveling and spending more time with my family. She has 3 children, 9 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. That keeps me busy. The many friends of longtime Canby resident Harry Lee Kwai will gather at Waite Park in Canby this Saturday to pay their respects and remember a man who lived an adventurous and remarkable life. The Aloha Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m. on August 2nd. Please dress comfortably and bring your own blanket or chairs to sit on. The event will also be live streamed by CTV Channel 5. Lee Kwai, who had relocated to Woodburn shortly before his passing on May 15th, was born August of 1947 in the Palama Settlement in Honolulu, Hawaii. The 73-year-old was reportedly swimming with a pod of dolphins during a return visit to his beloved native Hawaii and to visit family in Kalua Kona when he suffered a heart attack and drowned. Lee Kwai showed an early interest in learning about other parts of the world through his mentor, Lauren Gill, a naturalist and founder of the Hawaii chapter of the Sierra Club, who would take children on hikes and teach them about conservation. Heavily influenced by Gill in his teenage years and throughout his life, Lee Kwai attended Boise State University, earning a secondary education degree, and later the University of Oregon, where he earned his master's in community education. He eventually settled in Canby with his wife, Kim Lee Kwai, who preceded him in death. Lee Kwai was a former director of the Woodburn Area Chamber of Commerce and worked many years in marketing with the local telecommunications company, DataVision. Harry will be remembered as someone who brought people together to accomplish wonderful things, said longtime chamber member Bob Rhodes. His laugh and infectious smile will live in hearts for years to come. He traveled extensively throughout his life, fishing, hiking, and biking locally and in exotic locations. He undertook several missions trips to Guinea in West Africa with his local congregation, Canby Alliance Church. Above all, his family said Lee Kwai enjoyed spending time with friends and loved ones and was very much a people person. He enjoyed meeting new people of all walks of life, listening to their stories and helping them if he was able. In lieu of flowers or monetary gifts to charity, Lee Kwai's family asked that you honor him by paying his kindness forward to someone in need. Harry believed in helping people, his family said. His memory can best stay alive by giving to others.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast, and even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm going to make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional-grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Canby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by any time and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Canby or online at booknookcanby.com.
Joining us on the Canby Conversation today is one of the busiest men in Canby, Tyler Neiser, Event and Marketing Coordinator for the Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
Or as you were known last year, the coordinator for cancellations and drive-through events. And,
right.
Oh, man. Just looking back a little bit, what was all that craziness like? I mean, do you just try to put it out of your mind?
Yeah. No, it was super crazy, but I think, you know, on behalf of the event center, I mean, that's what we turned into, was like just being there for the community in every way, whether it was events or we turned into a resource during the storms that we had, whether it was fire. Or winter storm that we had, you know. So through it all, we wanted to be there for the community, and now we get to be there for the community into like our normal stuff. So we're excited for that. Yeah. We're not having to make stuff up now.
Right. Yeah, reinvent the wheel. Absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk fair. So tell us what's going on. What are you guys excited about? How hard has it been to try to spin this up in just a couple of months? What normally probably takes 10 to 12 months to plan. So.
Yeah. That's been the hugest challenge, is like something that takes us, you know, most of the year to plan, is crunching that down into 2 months. And so, but we're excited. We got most everything back as usual. The carnival's going to be here. Rodeo's going to be here. You know, we've got some entertainment coming that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And different things like that. The concessionaire, the food's going to be here. There is some food that just couldn't make it happen this year, but hopefully they'll be back in 2022. So it's going to be as close to normal as possible, because there is some things that just couldn't make it happen, you know, in planning that close.
I want to ask you, just for what you know, but how disruptive was this year off to a lot of the vendors and things that you work with? I mean, I remember back in 2020, that one of my big concerns is like, some of these places, and especially the food vendors, like I would just imagine they work on such slim margins. No worries. I'll just take a year off where I get 95% of my income, you know, and then just come back the next year.
Yeah.
Like, I was afraid we're going to lose a lot of them.
Yeah.
Is that what we've seen, or with some of the federal aid and things? Have they been able to weather?
I think there has been a lot affected by the vendors, you know. Yeah. So many of the vendors have been affected. I think probably like, I don't know, 30 to 40% have been affected, really. Okay. And some of them, like us, kind of reinvented themselves and did different things with their business that they kept with it. It was successful. So they were like, I know that there's a couple food vendors that were like, hey, we partnered with the Staples and we're in their parking lot now and we don't want to go away from that. Right. So there is some of that stuff where they found when in reinventing themselves, they were more successful. So they, you know, aren't going to be here for fair.
Yeah, interesting.
So yeah. And then others, they had to go into the workforce and completely, not do their food concessions anymore.
Right.
So we've seen both of, you know, both of that.
Right.
So.
And just sell out and go back to work. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we seeing that create some opportunities? Are we seeing maybe some new vendors emerge as well?
Yeah. Definitely some new vendors this year as far as food, which we're excited about. I mean, there's been people that have been on our application list for a while and we were able to reach out to them and they're, you know, take the opportunity. So, there'll be a different taste to some of the food vendors here. And
good plan.
Yeah. So we'll look forward to that, and then some of our staples that aren't able to be here, hopefully we can have them back in 2022.
The carnival, are we going to see the midway, the ride, that? I know early on when the board first approved to go forward with this, Lori, the executive director of the Fairgrounds, Lori Bothwell, was thinking that it might actually be a little bit bigger. There might be some changes in terms of, like, rather than number of rides or number of tickets you buy for a certain time window. Do you know, are we going to see some of those changes pan out, or is it going to be more like we've always seen before?
So we did want to make it a little bit bigger. We expanded them out into the roadway a little bit more, so there should be a couple more rides than we're used to, so we're excited about that. There isn't going to be timed. That was like early on, we were thinking that was going to happen.
Okay.
We're not going to see bracelets.
Okay.
It's just going to be all tickets.
Okay.
And I still need to get details on what they're doing for the kids' day. I think they did a special back, in 2019, they did a special with the bracelets where it was like bracelet day.
Right.
And I'm not sure if they're going to do like a ticket day, if there's a special for the kids on that day. So, but they've just had to transition from bracelets to tickets now. So
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
For parents.
And I don't know if that'll come back, you know. Hopefully that'll be back in 2022, but at least for this year they have to do tickets and stuff like that.
I'm just,
so,
you know, like flashing before my eyes.
Right.
That's I just found out where my last stimulus payment was going to go to rides at Blackhamse County Fair. But good for them. I mean, they've got income to make up as well.
Yeah.
Sense
I think they
business.
Really struggled, and I think if there wasn't another year of events for them, it would have been detrimental to the carnival
industry. After the up and down of the pandemic, do we really need more roller coasters?
There you go. Yeah.
One thing that we haven't talked about as much, and I know it's somewhat just because you're not as directly involved with it, but it's something that makes the Clackamas County Fair what it is obviously the 4-H and the animals and whatnot.
Yeah.
As far as you know, is a lot of that coming back as well? Or?
Yeah, so we're, that's a huge part of what makes the Clackamas County Fair and rodeo go on is the 4-H and FFA. And both of those are all coming back. The animals will be here for 4-H and FFA. And we've got the tents already set up for that. We're ready to go, and we're excited about that. So 4-H and FFA will be here. Unfortunately, open class will not be able to attend. We just had to limit it to that, and hopefully in 2022, the open class can return and we'll be full on with the animals.
Open class is where, like, non-4-H, non-FFA.
It's
basically the same thing, but different people.
Right. So there'd be like a little less animals involved because they do have quite a bit of animals that show up from open class. But I mean, we're still going to have a lot of animals here on site.
Yeah. And all the same categories, rabbits, they...
Yes. Yeah, all those...
Sheep and ferrets and...
Right. So we'll really be involved with... it'll just be the 4-H and FFA, and the auction will take place to support the kids and everything. Yeah. So,
well, that's a bummer about the open class. Yeah. But I mean, you know, just remembering any time I've been at the fair, it's such a big thing for the kids.
Totally.
The 4-H and FFA, and it just means so much to them, and they work so hard.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this is kind of their Hollywood moment.
Yeah. Yeah. In 2020, they actually, because we didn't have the fair, they still did 4-H and...
Right.
Auctioning.
Yeah, those animals don't stop giving birth. They stop eating.
And so they actually had a video themselves showing the animals.
Yeah.
they had a video themselves showing the animals. So it was a little different for them. So I'm sure they'll be happy to be back in normal showing.
They actually did a virtual auction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was really interesting.
Yeah.
We did a story on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what else do we got going on? We talked about the animals. Talked about the food. Rodeo is going to be every night.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You have to get your tickets separately, but can happen through the same website or.
Yeah, yeah, and they do a package online where you can get fair and rodeo. I would suggest getting them beforehand because they are going pretty fast.
Yeah.
They will be available at our ticket boxes Tuesday of fair, so August 17th.
Yeah, awesome. I've heard that there's something coming back this year to the fair, Pioneer Village.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
People Pioneer. Are excited about that.
Pioneer Village is coming back in full capacity.
That area was taken over by dogs.
It was.
So they reclaimed it. They reclaimed the pandemic. Their land. Those rugged pioneers.
Totally.
Reestablished. But some of those buildings and things were pulled out. So is that going to be rebuilt or?
No, they have their own tents and stuff like that that they're going to bring and still make it Pioneer Village and everything. So, yeah, the dogs are not going to return, unfortunately, but the Pioneer Village will and take up an even bigger space than they have in the past. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Any other changes that we'll see, either because of the continuing pandemic stuff or just, we're seeing very hot weather, you know, are there things like that, that either changes to the fair or just things that you want people to be aware of?
Yeah, we wanted to, for the heat especially, and then COVID, we wanted less people less in buildings. And so everything that was upstairs in the main pavilion is now downstairs for the entries. So you don't, I know
Coffee
that.
The art.
Yeah.
That's one thing we didn't talk about.
Yeah, that was all upstairs. And so I know it was really hot in the past up there and everything. So hopefully this will be better, bringing that to the main level of the main pavilion.
Yeah.
And
I appreciate you guys putting those big, like, swamp-style fans, but they really just blow a lot of air at me. I mean, I know you're doing your best.
Yeah. So they that'll be downstairs, and then all the vendors will be outside.
Yeah.
So it just made more sense to do it that way.
Yeah. That's a big part of the fair, and something that people get really excited about is being able to... I actually have a couple of photos in this year's fair that I've been waiting 2 years to be able to enter them.
Yeah.
But there's art and sewing and quilt making, and are we doing agriculture, crops and stuff like that this year?
Yeah, that'll still be there out kind of near Pioneer Village. They have those and stuff. So. And with that, the art department was a little bit, because it extends a little bit, so it was not enough room down on the main floor. So art will actually be in Clackamas Hall.
Okay.
And the Methodist Pies are not going to be here this year.
I
know.
Didn't hear about that.
So Methodist Pies won't be here this year, but hopefully they can return in 2022.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I know that, that's a big operation, a big lift for a little bit of an older congregation, and
exactly.
They had a change in leadership, I believe.
Yeah.
In their pastor. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So all those combinations made it not work this year. So
we'll
see what happens.
Yeah, I'll be able to get my sour cream.
Yeah. But it'll still be cool in the Clackamas Hall for art. So if you want to cool down, they'll have AC in there and you can check out all the art and stuff.
Yeah. Dairy Women, are they able to make it back?
They were unable to make it back as well. So that was kind of like the two staples.
Yeah.
Was them and the pies. So
Yeah. People would be happy to be back. Fair,
exactly.
I wanted to ask you about that, just what you've heard from people and just kind of your sense of the sense of excitement people have for this year's fair. I mean, I've been saying ever since you guys, ever since the board, you know, approved bringing it back, that this year is going to be the, you know, record-breaking biggest year. And
yeah.
I'm wondering if you think that's still going to hold to be true.
I think it will. We've seen, just from a lot of the vendors that are here, they do a lot of other events, and every event that they've been to, people have been really excited and showed up, and they've had record-breaking years for those events. So I think events are going to be, I think people want to get out and experience it. So yeah, we're hoping for a big year.
Yeah, awesome. And you've heard I know before the board made that decision, you guys were just getting flooded with calls. So
yeah.
Please do the fair, please don't cancel.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. People are really, and then after that, people being really excited that we are going through with it. So yeah.
Anything else to add about the fair? Where can folks get tickets and get more information?
Yeah, if they want to head to ClackamasCountyFair.com, there's a ticket button at the right corner, and get your tickets there. And if you don't want to deal with the internet, you can always come to the grounds starting August 17th and get your tickets at the gate.
Okay.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Before we let you go, I did want to ask about something else that's happening here at the fairgrounds that I believe you guys have been working on.
Yeah.
Which is the drive-in. We're
going
to bring that back. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, we've actually
You haven't been busy at all, so I imagine that hasn't been moving smoothly.
Yeah, we actually got the concrete poured for those. All we have to do is get the steel up, and we're just kind of coordinating that. The concrete needs to cure for a couple weeks.
Okay.
And then after that cures, then we'll get the steel going. But it's going to probably be cured right around fair, so we'll probably wait till after fair to get that all going.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's all going well, and hopefully here in the next month or so, we'll be ready to go.
And just so people know what we're talking about, last year you had the temporary drive-in.
Right.
Because there were challenges to, but the plan was always to do a permanent one, and that's what we're talking about. I believe the screen, unfortunately, was damaged in the September storm that sparked the wildfires.
Yeah.
And so that kind of led you guys to move forward with picking up those, dusting off those little plants.
Yep.
Is it going in that corner of the yellow lot where it was initially thought would be a good location for it? Or?
It's going to actually be a little bit more near where it was before, just a little past the gate.
Okay.
So
cool.
It could go either way.
Yeah, interesting. And more central.
Yeah.
Okay, great. There have been a number of businesses that donated to that project, including the steel, I believe. For me, they're American or BBC, I think.
Yeah, we've been working a lot with Emmerich, and they've been helping out with that.
Yeah.
And helping us out. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of concrete that goes into that, because there's so much wind on those tall poles, and the screen is like a 40-foot sheet of steel.
Yeah.
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 Not a lot of
big old sail.
Huge sail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So
it might be, again, sort of like September-ish, like last year.
Yeah.
When that wind.
Exactly.
Opened. Yeah.
And this time, hopefully no winds will take it down.
Yeah. Would you leave it up then permanently?
Yes.
Or bring it down, you know, in season?
No, the plan would be to just leave it up permanently
throughout
the whole year.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, obviously, fair is occupying a lot of your time.
Yeah.
Once you have some more firm dates about when that will happen, we'd definitely love to share that. Still partnering with Candy Cinema to
yes.
make that happen?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Excited that that's coming back.
Yeah.
So that was so much fun last year. And, nice to have that in a summer where, you know, so much stuff had to be canceled.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Tyler, for joining us on the show today. And we'll see you at the fair.
All right. Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. the first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends, in our last segment of the show, we bring you another edition of Can Be Then. And this one is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grand Street in downtown Canby, or you can connect with them on Facebook or through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. $24. That's how much it cost you in 1904 to join the Maxburg Mutual Telephone Company, which was formed on January 14th of that year. And if you could furnish your own telephone, well, all the better. In that case, you could access the magic of telephony for just $9. Maxburg Mutual brought the first telephone service to the area in the form of an independent cooperative, one that still exists today as DirectLink. Like other telephone co-ops across the United States, its history is an example of democracy in action. The independent telephone industry was developed throughout the country by farmers. Unable to receive telephone service in the small rural communities where they lived and worked, these hard-working, self-reliant, industrious folks did, well, they did what they always do. They worked together, pooled their resources, and they built their own. Maxburg Mutual did not go by that name for long, nor did it stay in Maxburg, wherever that is. Members voted to relocate the service to Canby in 1905, 1 year after it was founded. The next year, service demand had outpaced the co-op's original 4-line switchboard, and a new one was installed that could accommodate up to 50 lines. At first, they equipped it for just 15. The new switchboard cost a hefty sum of $150. But I'm sure the growing number of Canby residents who could now phone such exotic places as Malala, Oregon City, Markham, and New Era felt it was worth every penny. Switch tenders, or operators as they were more commonly known, were paid not by the hour but by the call, 3 cents for personal calls and 5 cents for business. History does not preserve how much the parents of teenagers had to pay per text message in those days, but we assume the costs were substantial. In 1907, an effort began to relocate the co-op to Canby. The momentum grew slowly but steadily for several years until a meeting of the Maxburg Board in 1911 recognized the formation of a new entity, which was given the mouthful of a name, Canby Exchange of Mutual Companies. The moniker was soon shortened to simply Canby Cooperative Telephone Association. By then, the co-op included farmer lines or companies in Maxburg, New Era, Central Point, Mundorf, East Canby, Barlow, Union Hall, Riverside, Mill Creek, and Oak Grove. In 1920, Canby Cooperative Telephone moved into its sparkling new offices on 2nd Street opposite Canby State Bank. It was also outfitted with a new 100-line switchboard. The move from its original location on A Street across the railroad tracks was completed the week before by the company's longtime lineman and general repairman, Russell Scramlin. The purchase of the property had been masterminded a year earlier by Franz Kraxberger, an early Canby mover and shaker who was also the president of the Canby Cooperative Cheese and Produce Company, but the move had been delayed because of needed supplies, equipment, and material. For its first 16 and a half years, the local exchange was the domain of the chief operator, Mrs. R. Soper, a Canby native and the daughter of early Oregon pioneers, along with her own daughter and assistant, Miss Rena Hutchinson. But Mrs. Soper, whom newspapers described as, quote, most capable and obliging, resigned in August of 1922 to be nearer to her 2 sons, Earl and Alan Hutchinson, who were businessmen in Newburgh. She was replaced by the wife of Canby farmer John E. Wells, with assistance from their daughters Mabel and Sylvia. The women's labor earned $1,800 a year, all of which went to Mr. Wells, according to the Oregonian. "Have you got your ears to the air?" the Canby Herald asked in 1922. Thousands have. Enthusiasm over the wireless telephone is spreading tremendously. If you thought 1922 was a little early for wireless telephone technology, you're not alone. Of course, what the newspaper was talking about was not really a telephone at all, but rather the radio. From a fad and a toy, the radio receiving set has become a household convenience, the paper continued. Out of the air come daily news bulletins, lectures, sermons, vocal and instrumental concerts, operas, market reports, church services, and children's bedtime stories. Local news streaming through the air straight to your personal devices? Imagine that. The growth of the co-op enjoyed during its first 3.5 decades were overseen by one steady hand, that of J.W. Smith, who served as its president from 1904 to his retirement in 1938, with one or two breaks in there that were richly deserved. Although not the cause of his retirement, a contributing factor may have been the growing complaints throughout the 1930s from people talking too long on the party lines. For those unfamiliar with the concept, party lines were essentially the reply all of the pre-email days and every bit as annoying. I want to break in here. My parents had an experience with a party line when I was growing up as a kid. You would literally pick up the phone and you would hear the conversation that was already happening because there was no way to discreetly share phone lines. So very glad to not be out of that. So they fixed it back in the 1930s. The co-op also received 240 complaints in that decade for bad operator services. On March 11, 1939, the skills of Canby cooperative telephone lineman James Mooney would be needed for a job he never anticipated. That morning, Captain H.A. Reynolds of the Army Air Corps Reserve was flying his single-engine military training plane in the vicinity of Canby airspace when icing on the motor forced him to bail out. Fortunately, the Pearson Field, Vancouver-based pilot, had a parachute. What he didn't have was a clear open field to land in. He wound up stuck in a tall fir tree on Oscar Olson's farm about a mile outside of the city, where he stayed almost an hour before rescuers brought him down. Or should I say rescuer? Singular. The hero was Mooney, who donned high climber's gear and installed block and tackle to reach the stranded aviator, whose chute had caught on a limb 100 feet above the ground. Captain Reynolds proceeded to shout for help, drawing a startled Oscar Olson from out of his barn. The Herald recounted, "Olson went to the farmhouse of A.B. Cole and called for the telephone lineman to aid Reynolds down from his perch, where he sat nonchalantly smoking. The captain was unhurt, except perhaps for his pride, and none the worse for his experience," the newspaper recorded. Mooney rigged up a harness and pulley system, and the aviator was safely lowered to the ground by several men in the gathered crowd below. In 1940, the company's name was shorted to the Canby Telephone Association, or CTA. The little independent co-op had grown to 4 employees and 515 phone lines. All 4 employees, along with most of the rest of the city, were active participants throughout the early 1940s in blackout drills used to practice the town's preparedness for an air raid by Imperial Japanese warplanes. On October 28, 1941, decoy bombers flew over the observation station located on the farm of one Clem Dietz. The smooth operator at the Canby telephone office reportedly received and relayed the message to the Portland headquarters in less than 30 seconds. Telephones were never more needed in Canby than the time a small boy riding alone on a Greyhound bus wound up in the right city, but the wrong state in 1947. That story and more next time on Canby Then.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.